My name is Serena Kurka and I welcome you quarterly to this podcast, Neue Musik Leben. I have studied classical singing, but I have been singing for many years, lots of contemporary experimental music, and I also do performance. And if you would like to know more about me, please look at my website www.irenekurk.de. You could also subscribe to my newsletter and you will find it on my website. In this podcast, I talk with you about topics all around contemporary music and the music world, and I share with you insights behind the scenes and insider knowledge. And what is most important to me, I want to bring you the human beings out of the new music world closer. I'm very happy that this podcast is listened to worldwide. Thank you so much for tuning in and giving me your precious time. And thank you also for all the feedback you give me. I'm cooperating with the NMZ, Neue Musikzeitung. It's one of the most important German music papers. If you don't know it, please check it out. And well, I also had great performances lately. I sang at Semi Breve in Braga. I did Singing Future in Düsseldorf, and I might include some of the videos in the show notes. Today I have a very special guest and a very special topic for you. I'm talking with the soprano, with the singer, with the pedagogue, with the author, with the coach, Iris Seisjärvi, who is from Finland. And the how we got to know each other is an interesting story, because I'm friends with Siglinde Schneider. And Siglinde Schneider is also an amazing singer, and I had her interviewed as well here. It is in German. And we actually talked about how it is to still sing very beautifully, even though your biological age is progressing. And Iris has been in Germany a long time ago, I think, as an au pair. And she took voice lessons from Siglinde Schneider. And somehow they kept in touch. And Iris now published a very interesting book. You can get it anywhere. And it's a book on vocal shame and not being good enough. And those are so important topics for any artist, for any musicians, for any singer. I mean, basically for any human being. And so Iris sent me this book, I read it, and then I obviously decided to interview her. So let's dive into this topic now with Iris Seisjärvi.
Hello, Iris Seisjärvi. I welcome you cordially to my podcast today, and I'm excited to talk with you about a very important topic.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here. It's a great pleasure.
Thank you very much. And you are a soprano in Finland.
Mm-hmm.
And before we also get to the topic and on your important book, I would like to get to know you more a bit and the audience. And I would like to know, how did you find your way into music, or even into new and experimental music? Because I know that you also have been singing contemporary opera. So how did it go for you?
Oh, yes. Actually, it happened when I was doing my vocal teacher studies. And at the same time, I did 1 year of opera specialization studies. And there I sang Detlef Klanert's, from Detlef Klanert's chamber opera, Der Engel auf dem Schiff, the role of Minna. So that was like my first step into modern music. And I really fell in love with that. It's so beautiful, and you are able to express yourself in a very different ways than compared to traditional classical singing. And also I was introduced Finnish composer Kaija Saariaho's late, already unfortunately she died last year. I was introduced her to her Leino songs that are very beautiful, and that also became my basic repertoire. And as a singer, I have been mostly working in choirs and also in soloistic ensemble. And this was, I actually made a world premiere of Seppo Pohjola's new opera in 2015, The Maiden of Harboda, and I was part of the solistic ensemble of Kokkola Opera Finland. So that's my experience from them.
That's amazing. And it's always great to hear from people who are maybe classically trained or also doing lots of classical music that you're, you know, also like this other world.
Yes.
And what else are you doing these days, or how does your portfolio look? Because I know you're singing, I think you're also teaching, then you wrote a book. So what are you doing?
Yes. So today I am actually doing a doctoral dissertation on my subject, where I study shame and shame resilience in the career of Finnish classical singers. So that's why I'm not working as a full-time singer at the moment, and perhaps not anymore. I might do it in the future, but just for me, or just for fun, or to have the instrument back in shape. But I'm also working as a teacher, and I have specialized to teach students who are suffering of vocal shame. And I also hold Silenced by Shame workshops, where we address vocal shame in a group setting. So there's a peer support to deal with vocal shame. So this is what I'm doing nowadays.
Okay, so we are already there with this important topic, shame. And how did you find your interest for it, or why is it so important to you to figure out things about it, or how you can help people or singers or musicians?
Yes, when I started singing lessons, before that I actually did not have any problems with singing. I loved singing in front of people, so there wasn't any problems with that. But when I started the singing lessons, I started having problems because I did not understand the teacher's teaching and pedagogical point of views. And this caused a lot of problems with my technique. For example, when I started to sing, I always started to have this unpleasant feeling of throat. So it got stuck in some ways and the voice just couldn't get out. And at that time, I didn't realize that I felt started to feel shame about it because I didn't progress. But on the contrary, my voice became smaller and it was so unpleasant tightness in the throat and in my body. So that was the one place where it started. And I actually tried different teachers. Like I tried to have help from many directions, but it took some years before I found the first teacher who was able to help me technically. So I was actually able to get back on the right track vocally. And at that time I was studying at the university. I did ethnological studies there. But I had private lessons every now and then, until I met this teacher who really saw the potential behind all these technical issues that I had developed during those years. And eventually this led me to start actually voice studies, and first singing studies like full time, and then teacher studies and these opera specialization studies later. And it was actually a big road, and I think many people would have just given up because it was so difficult. And I was told that I'm too old to become a singer or voice teacher, and I was rejected in entrance exams when I tried applying. So it was really like I also felt quite alone with this thing that I felt that, oh, I thought I had some talent, then suddenly I thought that I have no talent at all. So it was really like, and I couldn't really discuss it with anything until I found this teacher helped me. Later in the studies, when I was reading a book by a Finnish shame researcher, Ben Malinen. And he was talking about life-restricting shame. And then I realized that, okay, shame is also, it's a very negative emotion and hard emotion to confront, but it's also a very physical emotion. So therefore I realized that, okay, if it's a very physical emotion, then it's affecting my body. So it's affecting my technique. And that's the place I realized that, okay, this is something to be researched. This should be researched. And this is something that should be also discussed. Because when I started doing my bachelor's thesis on this subject, I couldn't find anything. I found information about performance anxiety, but that was it. But what about if you have some kind of anxiety when you are trying to approve your instrument and progress? So this was the first step. And when I did my bachelor's thesis and also my master's thesis, we might be discussing a bit soon, and this is the book you were talking about, I realized that I'm not the only one. Like, there are so many students and also singers, professional singers, that have issues with shame. And therefore, it should be addressed and should be also discussed widely also in the studies. Every teacher should be aware of this emotion and how it affects also the teacher and the student. Yes.
So would you say that this teacher who could help you, was she just helping you technically, or could she, I don't know, reach you differently, or also kind of help you to let go of the shame or exchange it with, I don't know, the joy about you and your voice?
I think there were many aspects, and the technical issues were that she was able to free the voice. But also she said, like, she was actually also the first one who said, like, hey, have you thought that you should be studying singing? Like, you really have the very good voice material, so why don't you go and try for it? And then I said, oh, I have actually tried, but I couldn't, and so on. And so she also really believed in my potential. And that was also a big thing for me, because I had been struggling for so many years and with a negative feedback. So it was also a mental support for me. And that was also very highly, equally important beside the teaching.
When I read your book, Not Good Enough, Vocal Shame Among Finnish Classical Artists and Singers, you can get it anywhere. And I thought, what shame is, and I'm also familiar with it in some ways. And I think shame is always that, for me, that you think something is wrong with you. And I wouldn't say that I would think about it in that way, but I know a lot of those themes, or I had to go through them myself, those themes, whatever, not being good enough. And the interesting thing is, as you said, it's kind of hard to talk about it, but shame, in my experience, only changes or gets released if you talk about it, because then it comes out of the dark. And as you said, when you realize, okay, I'm not on my own, because oftentimes when you're maybe struggling with your teacher, or you feel I should progress faster, but somehow I don't, you always think you are the fault.
Yes.
And if you don't talk to other people, maybe they would say, well, I often feel the same. Or we just talked about this amazing book also by Renée Fleming, The Inner Voice, where she also has many chapters on how difficult it is to become a good singer. I mean, it's in our body, it's just us, and to find the way. And it's also, for most of us, not an instrument you learn in 2 days. It's a longer process.
Yes.
And to be much more gentle with ourselves. And how she also said, well, I didn't get this. And I also remember, I mean, I don't like this word support, breath support, but I use it now because I think that's maybe the clearest. But I realized when I finally found it, it felt so different than I thought it would feel. And it's not easy to sing. And I really value your work in that regard, that whatever shame is for you, you will explain it to us in a few seconds. That we can free ourselves for that. And also that teaching, but some teachers who I know, and also when I teach, have changed already. It's not just about teaching bad and wrong or correct and wrong. And also I sometimes have singers who come from a different area, a different music genre, and they also want to expand their voice. So they come to me, and my roots are classical, but I can also help people, whatever you do, raga or other styles. And I never would say this, what you have learned, and you know, is wrong. You're just adding something else. But you might still use it. And maybe for some genre, it's fun that you use it that way. And I think that's also a very different approach that you get out of this wrong, right, but rather, I rather want my students to experience something and maybe feel, oh yeah, this feels easier going. Okay, enjoy it. So yes. I have talked a lot. How do you define shame?
Well, if you answer to a question, am I good enough? Yeah, and you say no, I think there's a root of shame. And it's a lot to do with the identity also. And being a human, it's a very, every human feels shame once in a while, because it's also, we are kind of social animals, and the connection to other people is highly essential for us. And back a long, long time ago, it's if you weren't, you were rejected and outcasted from the group, it was death to you. So somehow in our brains, it's actually, when we feel shame, it feels in the brain the same areas are activating than in physical pain. But to make it short, it's a fear after being rejected. Yes, it can be described as the emotion, as a person's reaction to being rejected. Like somebody is rejecting you. And also it can be yourself. As a singer, you see, think that I did not sing well enough. And you make a statement about yourself, and then you feel shame. And it's a very negative and painful emotion, and it's connected to failure. And this failure is often witnessed by other people. For example, if a singer is failing at stage, this shame can be huge, because there were so many people witnessing this failure, and perhaps critics writing harsh critics the next day you are reading about your failure. So this is shame. And shame can be also, it can be connected to anything, your status, your appearance, your looks, your age, your body, your weight, your background, where you come from. If you have a poor family, you can be ashamed of your poor family, and so on. So it can be, you can feel shame almost with anything.
I also think it's something very human, but it's also interesting that you now pick it up in the context of singers. And so now let's talk about the book. Also, how did you come to get to write this now? I mean, we know how this topic kind of reached out for you, but it's also then still another step to write about it, or even now do a doctoral thesis about it.
Thanks. I think when I was writing my master's thesis, I realized once again that there really isn't any discussion about this subject, and people should be aware of this. Like I said, teachers should be aware of this, singing students and singers, like how to deal with shame when you experience it, or how to also get rid of excessive amount of shame, like normal amount of shame. Sometimes it's very human to feel shame. You can't get rid of it totally, but too much of shame is not healthy for your mental health and in any ways. So then I made a decision that I would do a book on this, on my master's thesis. I would write it in a book form so it would be available for everyone, because I think it is the first book written about vocal shame. And there is only one Norwegian researcher, Therese Shea, and she has researched shame in a long run. I think she's the only one that I have learned doing this, and she has done most of her research in Norwegian. So this is not many people understand or read. So I was happy that I was doing my master's thesis in English, so more people could find it. And I think it's kind of an introduction to this subject, because I really hope more and more people would find this research topic. And also, it's actually, shame is connected to trauma. And therefore, some research about voice and trauma has been done. For example, Elisa Monti is doing that in the States. But this was the reason I did it, so people would find it. And it's kind of peer support. When we were talking about Fleming's book, that helped us all, like was helpful or for us all, both. And also inspiration, like if you hear that Renée Fleming is talking about her insecurities during her times when she was studying, then you understand that, okay, I'm not the only one who have this very negative thoughts about the voice. And also Karita Mattila, who is one of the most famous Finnish soprano or opera singer, I used her book there as a preference source, because she was talking in her book quite a lot about shame. And I think it's also comforting for people, the students, or it should be, because you have this idea that you are not the only one suffering of these things or emotion and thoughts. Yeah,
I'm also very thankful for the book by Renée Fleming, as you mentioned, because it's one of the few biographies that is honest. Most biographies, I mean, I read, like probably most singers do, all biographies I could get into my hands, whatever, since I'm 16. But most of them were just like, and then I sing this and I was so great. And then I sang at the Metropolitan and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's cool. But yes, it gives you a wrong impression.
Yes.
And the other book that kind of helped me, that was the situation you just mentioned. One of my first kind of bigger appearances with an orchestra, I was singing. Mm-hmm. And it was a school performance. I was at a very musical school and we had a very good orchestra. And I did this Mozart Laudate Dominum. And I think I was too anxious about the whole thing. And I really got very hoarse. Mm-hmm. And now looking back, I think the teachers should have taken care of me and saved me and said, like, well, if you are hoarse, you're not singing.
Yes.
But I thought I have to do it somehow. I have to do it. And I tried whatever, everything. And then I also did the mistake. I didn't know then. I was like, I don't know, 16, 17, that if you're hoarse, sing as little as possible, then maybe you have a chance to survive the performance. So I sang in rehearsal and it worked. And I'm like, okay, I'm cool. But then it happened that the performance was not good. And I got a bad review, but kind of saying, well, the singer sounded a little bit sick, which was true. And I also thought for some reason, I mean, it was in a middle-sized town in Germany, that now everybody would look at me when I would walk around. Oh yeah, she's the one who sings badly, which is obnoxious, because I don't know who cared, who even read that. And we know that nowadays people forget, maybe even after 2 days they have read it. And then I found this book by Peter Schreier. He was a German tenor. And he also had almost the same experience. I mean, he was a little bit older, that he was sick, and he tried to sing it. It didn't work out. And he also wrote them, like, I was so concerned. Everybody now was thinking this about me, and I had bad reviews. And then I realized, well, this man still became a very good and even famous singer. So that helped me. So in that way, it's so good if we talk about things
Yes.
that not everything is just easy and perfect.
Yes.
And you also mentioned Carita Mattila. I'm so sad in a way that her book until now only exists in Finnish and not even in English.
Yes.
I hope their publisher will think about it, because I'm sure it could be a great success. But you used some of the, you even cite them in your book. And she is so honest. There are things you're quoting. I'm like, oh my God, she's
yes.
really writing that. How brave she is.
Mm.
And when I add then also this thing that you also talked about, that people don't want to talk about shame. It's not so easy to even find people who are willing to work with your questionnaire and so on. And that you also have this thing in Finland or Scandinavia that, oh, rather, I don't stick out too much. And Carita Mattila had to do with this. And now you're going out with this topic. So you're also sticking out. Why
yes.
is she not talking about it? Can she just keep quiet?
Yes. Yeah, I'm now sticking out with this thing. And yeah. But I think it's so important. And I, like, when I started it more than 10 years ago, I remember that I was, when I was in this same class seminar talking about the theme of my bachelor's thesis, and I really got ashamed when I said, like, oh, I'm researching shame with within among the Finnish classical like students. And I really felt this shame in my body, because everybody went awkward, like, oh, she's talking about this S word, like, that is very taboo. But nowadays, well, I have been talking about it more than 11 years now, so I'm not ashamed anymore. But actually, when you're talking about shame, it's really affects, raises this emotion in yourself. That's why people try to avoid it to the end, because it's a shameful thing to talk about. Unless you have been searching it for 11 years.
I know, it's this vicious circle kind of thing. And the thing is also, I mean, if you are a musician and a singer, you need a lot of good self-esteem to get through, you know, university and later on in life. I mean, I think it's a great job, but it's not always easy. So, and also about like self-critique or perfectionism, you talk about that also in your book. And I find that also very interesting, because in a way, I think self-critique can make you progress if it's not maybe too much, too overdone. Because if you're just like, oh, I don't care about anything, I don't know, maybe you don't progress.
Yes.
But it can be too much. And oftentimes, I think most of us have it too much. That's my observation. And I found it also interesting, because I think I'm also can be intellectual, even though I have been letting go a lot of that also in the past few years. And one of my teachers, when I was doing my bachelor, she often said to me, Irene, I wish you could be an airhead just for 3 days and kind of be dumb up there, because you're like, you're thinking too much. Just sing.
I have been told the same.
Really?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Like, you're too intelligent to be a singer.
But the thing is, back then, I didn't get it. I was kind of mad. I'm like, why should I be dumb?
Was. Yeah.
But now I understand, because I'm teaching myself a lot, and I sometimes can see how people get in the way or how I got into my way.
Yes.
And this is what I'm saying. What is a good balance, or how do I find this that I feel vulnerable, I feel fine with myself, I'm encouraged, I like singing. What I what can I do with this shame when it shows up?
Yes. So what to do with shame? Do you mean in what with students or?
For example.
Yeah, well, if you are thinking about students and how to help a student who is struggling with vocal shame, it's, yes, I use this term vocal shame. That means like that you are feeling that your voice is not good enough. You feel shame about your voice, and it can be related to vocal technique or also some vocal qualities. For example, vibrato has been mentioned a lot, many times in my research data, like, or the qualities, like the color, the voice color is something that has been negatively discussed with some authorities. But anyways, how to help a student with shame, vocal shame, is first of all, you as a teacher has to be also dealt with your own shame is the most important. And in a safe environment, you need to create this for your student. And I like, because I have specialized working with students, especially like the beginners who can't really like, they can't even open their voice to sing. This is the starting point. So it's important to have this autonomic nervous system to calm it down, because if we feel shame, we have this flight, fight, freeze, fawn mode. And this is affecting your breath, your diaphragm is not working well, it's affecting your heart rate and your throat and everything. So the first thing is to calm the student and say, it's okay, nothing is going to happen to you. And we start working step by step with this problem. And also discussing shame, like give this to all your students, this book. So this is a peer support for them, because they see, okay, I'm not the only one who has these really negative inner thoughts that are really actually locking our bodies. And we can't sing because, oh, this sounds horrible. And we go so tense and we can't just open our bodies and let the voice come.
And would you say nowadays the people who come to you are coming specifically with that they're struggling with shame, or?
Yes.
So you're known for that, that you
yes
are an expert.
Yes.
And how do you deal then with this self-critique and perfectionism?
Yes, because you were actually talking about this, and this is a very important point of view, because we need some amount of self-critique and perfection, as you mentioned, in order to advance. But this too much of it really can hinder us. And actually, I did one interview with a very talented singer, and she said that being a perfectionist prevented her doing some necessary steps to advance her career, because she had such a voice that she could have done international career, but she wanted to play in a safe zone. And also, for example, once she did not apply for one singing competition, even though her teacher said, like, you really should go and you might win. But she wanted to play in the safe place and do a smaller career, even because she, of course, the bigger career it is, there's more pressure. So, but yeah, this is a good topic.
Did she feel then fine with her with her smaller career, or did it kind of nag in her, knowing, I could have done something else and I'd choose something? Or I mean, some people also, I have colleagues who then, whatever, if they want to have family, they go into opera choirs or choirs of our broadcast stations, and it's a very safe job, it's a good job, it's a very well-paid job, actually. And I think for some, it's aligned, it's an aligned action, so it's fine to choose whatever is maybe the more safe thing. But how was it for her then?
Well, I think it might have nagged her as well, but perhaps in the end she was satisfied with this decision. But of course, yeah, you never know like what the life would have been if she had tried more. Yes.
Because I think I know more the other thing, that I often have the feeling, or it accompanied me a while, that I always felt I know I can do much more, and why is it not happening yet? Or when I also was not with my technique at that point where I wanted to be, eventually I got there, and that was nagging me, knowing, wow, I have, as your teacher also said to you, I have so much potential, I want to get it out and not being stuck somewhere. And
yes.
I also thought then about, and I found maybe also a difference between reflecting your book. I asked myself, well, did I ever feel vocal shame? And as I said, maybe I wouldn't have called it that. Maybe it was this, I'm not good enough. But I also know this, that for a while in my career, I also tried to do it as all the others did. And then about 10 years ago, somehow also with this, no, it's not 10 years ago, it's shorter, I don't know. But then there was a change somehow in me that I'm like, I don't care anymore. And since I don't care anymore and I just do what I want, it's much easier.
This is good not to care too much, because you just do your thing.
And the one thing then I realized is, and I think one of your singers also brought it up, that I always felt comfortable on stage when I was performing whatever, an opera or a concert. And that was always the nicest thing for me. So I'm like, well, do I have vocal shame? But then I realized what I also didn't like too much, and I don't have to do it as much anymore, or hardly do it, were auditionings. I sometimes, there was one type of audition I always got sick. So I realized, oh, yes, there was something weird going on in me. And as soon as I whatever got my job and I was on stage, I was fine. So I also realized there can be very slight nuances where this really might hit you.
Yes. And it's, as you mentioned, it's so different. I also have this experience when I was in a role. It was so much easier because I wasn't Iris. I was Minna or doing whatever. So I could be something else, because I am, as a person, I am more like a researcher type. And actually, I loved being in a choir, because you were singing with everybody else. You did not have the pressure of being one in the spotlight. I liked sharing the spotlight with other people. But also, actually, when I did this on only a few soloistic things, it really helped me not to be in the role, because it was a play. You did it yourself with your own weaknesses and your own shame. And actually, I sometimes did better when I was performing in a role than in a rehearsal booth, because there was this atmosphere and you had this certain thing, your repertoire you sang, and that was it. What was it? And there was these costumes and makeup and everything. So it wasn't the normal life with shame. But also sometimes shame came to me on stage.
Yeah, interesting, interesting. Yeah, I like being a soloist actually, but I realized when I'm already performing or singing a concert, that it feels like I'm already there and I'm just enjoying it. And I think with audition, I also had maybe this connection, I have to do this audition great that I get the job. And that's somehow a very different energy or motivation than just being, yeah, I'm on stage and I'm
Yes, then you want to go to the stage and some people are saying if you get it, you go on the stage or not.
Right. I'm depending on their opinion again.
Yes.
And would you say nowadays that also it's good to compliment or strengthen students? I often thought about that, and I feel with some people, or who at least I'm working with, or the conductors, they are more modern, they are more positive, and I experienced both. I had once a situation with a conductor with a very, very difficult piece where they were even, it was contemporary, where they were even thinking, oh, maybe we should just record it and then you act on stage because it was an opera. And I said to him, no, we're not going to do that. We have to learn this piece.
Yes.
And he rehearsed so greatly that we all could do it in the end. And people were really outgrowing themselves. It was really amazing. But I also had another experience with a conductor way back. And I don't know, I later on heard that he had often problems, how he dealt with people. One orchestra even kicked him out, but I didn't know that back then. And when I did this thing with him, well, first we had a different understanding about the piece, how we would interpret it. And the other thing was he would come to every rehearsal and tell us, well, you're not doing it really well. This is really this sucks what you do. And so I went, all of us, all the musicians and me went into this concert. Well, we suck anyway. Why are we standing here? So this was one of those performances. I'm just glad that it was over, but that was not fun. And I could really feel the difference if you really, pushing people in a positive way versus, oh, you're the biggest loser. This sounds awful. What are you doing here?
Yes, this is because you can be kind of demanding in a positive way. You can be also kind. You don't have to be like humiliate the singer anyways at all, because it doesn't help to them to become better.
And then we also have to deal with critics and reviews. That's also interesting. And I, as I mentioned, I know back then they often hit me a lot. I think sometimes when they were writing something I didn't understand or didn't like, I was down at least for a week. And as more as I moved on, and I also got many amazing reviews, and think later on, I'm too busy to think so much about a review, but I still think it's a hard thing. I mean, it's somehow part of our business. We are seen, we are heard, and people can write about us.
Yes.
And I also found it interesting that, and then it's always good coming back to those whatever very famous singers who also say how it challenged them, that, you know, they're also struggling with it, even if they are singing at whatever the Metropolitan all the time. And I read a very, very funny book a long time ago, but I don't know who it was by. It was when I was studying in Dallas, Texas. And it was a book about a gala at the Metropolitan Opera. And it was, I don't know who the writer was. She somehow was involved and knew everything. And it was, in a way, hilarious, because there were all those very, very known singers showing up, and whatever, each was allowed to sing an aria, but it was kind of a battle. Oh, she's singing 2 seconds longer than me. Okay, then I have to change my aria. Then I sing this. Oh, she has a high C. Okay, I'm still gonna change. And I'm like, what's going on there? You're already at the Olymp where everybody wants to be, and then there's still the stuff going on. So in a way it was, entertaining somehow, but I'm like, okay,
yes,
those are we singers.
Yes. Sometimes. Like, yeah. Oh.
So what are your thoughts on critics and reviews, and how can we handle them better?
Yes, well, this is a very important subject and matter, because I think there can be good reviews and bad reviews, like from the perspective of have they actually made a good review? Are they really knowing what they are talking about? Because sometimes, like Karita Mattila pointed out, like in London, there were so many contradictory reviews, like were they even seeing the same performance? Like, because they are, of course, critics should be professionals, and they should have like professional opinions, but sometimes they can be very subjective. And of course, it's right to say if the singer did not succeed or there was some flaws, but actually, if you want to, you can write a critique in a way that you are honest, but you don't need to humiliate people. Because sometimes I feel like they want to write in a way that they make themselves feel worth and like getting them up somehow. I mean, like you can have give the critique in a way that you don't need to humiliate the singer. It's possible.
What I also found funny, there was a church choir where I often sang the solo parts, whatever, Messiah, Mozart, Requiem, and so on, and where you whatever had three or four soloists, and they always had the same critique writer who came by, and I guess he somehow has learned or thought, well, I'm a critique, so I cannot just write good things. So I always have to also say something critical. And it always seemed like that he would just then pick one of the four soloists, and one of the four soloists would always suck. Oh. So every time you were there, like, oh, is it gonna hit me today? But oh. After a while, we just laughed about it because it really flipped around and whatever. I mean, out of four, most of the times you got a good review, but sometimes you were the one where he had to find something. Oh, she's saying boring.
Yes. Sometimes if a performance is very good, then there's nothing to criticize, I think. Then you should really write it. Like, no, it was perfect. I have nothing wrong to, nothing negative to say. Yes.
Yes, as so you also already told us what would help us is the safe environment, the encouragement of a teacher, the honesty of a teacher to maybe even also admit, well, I know how you feel, or I experienced the same, well, sometimes, and this is how I dealt with it. And I think it's also challenging that I think most of us have not learned to deal with their feelings. I mean, we have those quoted negative feelings, whatever, shame, fear, or anger or something like that. And who has really learned to deal with it, that it's okay? I mean, it's a normal human reaction. And I mean, most feelings also want to tell you something. So if you could hear to it, I'm like, okay. Or you realize, okay, this is over somehow, or it's just my pattern. And I think that's the hardest thing to learn. I mean, most of us, or at least I had to learn it then in my adult life, that it's okay to feel certain things, and you feel like you're gonna die, but you're not gonna die. It feels existential, but it's not. It just doesn't feel good. And if you can kind of, I feel, embrace it somehow, then it disappears. So what else helps me getting along or find peace with shame?
Yes, like this is the same I wanted to address, because when I was struggling with my voice and my shame, it really wasn't like, there wasn't any discussion about emotions, how emotions affects positive and negative emotions affect your mind, your body, and therefore your voice. There wasn't any, because this would have helped me a lot, because I could have what I'm doing now, what I have been doing many years, for example, yoga, meditation, different body-mind techniques, Feldenkrais, Alexander technique, Rosen therapy, and so on. There are so many, and also therapy. You go and talk about shame to a professional to in order to get rid of too much of shame or unhealthy shame. So this is that you can do, and this is many things are that you can do outside of the singing voice studio, because a voice teacher can't be obviously a therapist. They are voice teachers, but they can be a mental support as well. So I think these are like very important things to bear in mind. Like in my book, I give examples how professional singers have overcome this unhealthy shame and how it's done. But for me, I have done so many things, and I have also, because I was kind of, I learned not to express negative emotions such as shame or fear or anger or envy, like these kind of things. So they are part of human, and you need to kind of embrace them and accept them as, and also be aware how they affect your body and your voice. Like, but there are so many things, and I think many people, they just need to find their ways, like what suits them personally, to try to, for example, free your body. It can be some, for example, free movement for someone, or like anything that calms your autonomic nervous system and opens your body. Like there's many things. Somebody can have a find the key from some dance lesson. Yeah, there's many possibilities for it. Mm. But teachers need to educate their students about this, and they need to talk openly about these things. Like, oh, by the way, do you know that shame is affecting your voice? It can, like, you know, like you don't need to address that you are feeling shame, are you? Like, because the person can tell themselves. But in a, like, just discuss, for example, like you were, you mentioned earlier that I, like it takes a long time for to develop singing technique. And for example, this is one big problem if you are comparing yourself to professional singers when you are beginner, because you can't sound the same as René Fleming. And then when you hear René Fleming is singing something, then you record your voice and you are like, oh my God, this is horrible. I don't sound like René Fleming. What am I doing wrong? Yeah, like this, like the progress, it takes time, but it helps you when you have other tools for this time you are progressing. And of course, you need the right singing technique for you and the teaching.
Yeah, I think they're very important points you just make. And also with therapy, I think that's sometimes really necessary. And at least in my bubble, there are a lot of very aware teachers, professors, but I also know, I don't know them so much, but sometimes I hear stories that it's not everywhere like that. And one thing I also noticed in my career, in my life with singing, and I don't know how it is for you or your, what you have watched in singers and students. I always wanted to become a very good singer. And so I was open to things. And then I also realized that I did therapy when I was fairly young. And I noticed when things happened in my therapy, or I, whatever, progressed somehow emotionally or whatever, was more aligned with myself, that suddenly my voice got better. And so it kind of opened also this whole world up for me with whatever alternative healing and yoga and all that, or meditation. Mm. But for a long time, just because I wanted to become a better singer, later on, I realized, oh, well, this also enriched my life. Or sometimes people also ask me for coaching that have nothing to do with singing, because they're like, I feel it with you. I want to learn something from you. I like whatever, who you are. And, but I guess you already nodded that this is also your observation, that those things are so entangled that mm. obviously if I'm freeing up emotionally or on some other level, my voice changed.
Yes, this is very true and correct. Like, and sometimes actually I have this experiences, like I have been somehow anxious in the when I was studying singing, and then I cried in the singing lesson, and I was able to just I cried, then I started to sing, and it actually opened up because I let this emotion to come, and it wasn't stuck in my throat. And then I just cried to my teacher, and then we studied again, and then it was like a totally different thing. So yeah, so many things affect and can do a big difference to the voice.
Oh, yeah, that's really amazing. I also remember, I mean, I had also lessons with my teacher where I cried, but she, I think there were things where whatever, I loosened up things with my tongue and I don't know what was suddenly released. But she was always very fine with that. She's like, this is normal, you're releasing something. You don't need to know what it is. Just let it go. And I often, I mean, I don't do therapy with my voice students, but I sometimes realize when they also get to a point and they whatever get emotional, I'm like, okay, something is happening here. And sometimes I let them know, I'm like, this can happen. I mean, you're releasing old patterns. And also if you sing with a more open throat, I mean, we know that there are also mechanisms that kind of try to protect you and to really let go. That can be challenging. I often say also that singing for me is the bravest thing you can do because you always let go and you jump into the unknown.
Yes, it really is. Yes. And people hear you, then you really come visible because I think with my students, of course, they are like beginners and they really have the problem of they don't want to be seen or heard, or they might have negative experiences of it. So then you start shutting yourself down because you, if you can't be heard, or you, and actually many some professional singers I have interviewed or they answered to my questionnaire said that some people had said that they have a too loud voice, sing speaking voice, so they had to shut them. Yes. Especially if you sing classical, you are a classical singer, it's really you, everybody hears that because you are projecting the voice. So, and if you are struggling with shame, it really comes like, oh, I can't. So there's this contradictory, and it's difficult to be like, at the same time, silenced, but by shame, and you should be singing. So that's why this question is so, or this theme is so interesting, relating to voice and shame relating to voice. Yes.
So I really think we covered a lot of things, maybe some things we just touched, and we could talk even more about it because I think it's such a deep and rich topic. And well, I advise everybody to get the book as well and get started with it. And we're also looking forward to your next book, your thesis. And I guess anyone who wants to work with you can contact you and yeah, just follow you and see what you're doing. We will put all the information about you into the show notes that you're findable and available. And yeah, so we are now at the end of our interview, and I would like to know, is there one more tip you would like to give a young artist?
I think the most important thing is to get to know yourself. Because the more you know yourself and your emotions and how you feel, the better you make it. Because you really need to have this self-awareness and self-knowledge about yourself. And that also makes you stronger. Because, for example, if you are feeling shame, you can somehow relax, like, okay, everybody is feeling shame every now and then, but I'm not, and I'm admitting it. Like American shame researcher Brené Brown is talking about vulnerability. And I think this is such a big and huge step. If everybody would embrace their vulnerability and shame, I think the world just would be a better place. And I think this is something. This I had known earlier, I would it would have my journey would have been so much easier. But on the other hand, now I am a shame researcher, so it went as it had to, but to make other people's journey a bit easier,
this is you touched another very important thing to know yourself. And also when those feelings like shame or so show up, I know it sounds very easy, but it's not easy to embrace it. But the secret behind this is that oftentimes when we feel something like this, we are critically again, we don't want to have it and to put this away. And then the thing that goes against it gets even bigger. And sometimes it's, as you just mentioned, if we get there, easier to say, okay, feeling shame now. Mm-hmm. Wow. So I wish you a wonderful day and let's keep in touch.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
This was the interview from today. I hope that it inspired you. And please send me your emails, send me your feedback, because I love to interact with you. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really, really hope that you liked it. And please tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene. Thank you.